used the same pen knife for 25 years. Sometimes he changed the blade and sometimes the handle. But the knife was the same. That is what always happens with followers of epoch-making leaders, Gandhi not excluded. So let us take it for granted that these revolutions were Marxist revolutions. But there was a difference of opinion among the Marxists themselves. There are Leninists and there are Trotskyites. Isaac Deutscher, who has written a very voluminous biography of Trotsky, has written, "These are unfinished revolutions." Unfinished revolutions because there is still the necessity of a counter-revolution. A counter-revolution is born out of reaction. And any movement or any type of social change that is the result of reaction cannot be revolutionary. So when we speak of a complete revolution, a total revolution, what we mean is that there will be no further necessity for a counter-revolution, which means that there will be room for difference of opinion. The soul of a democratic setup is, you may say it is the oxygen of democracy, the right to think. And the right to think means the right to think differently. Otherwise, the right to think has no meaning whatsoever. When you concede the right to think, it is the right to think differently. There is an amusing instance in the Roman Catholic Church, very interesting. The Roman Catholic Church is always regarded as being somewhat narrow-minded, in spite of its Catholic name. It's not Catholic at all. But there is one characteristic, one feature of the Roman Catholic Church which I think must be commended. And that feature is that when a Roman Catholic saint is canonized, there is held a ceremony, and in that ceremony there is one dignitary, Advocatus Diaboli, the advocate of the devil. Because if in the audience hall of God the devil is not allowed to have his say, there is no justice. The devil also should be allowed to have his say. So in a democratic context, not only difference of opinion, but dissent. Dissent is not only tolerated, but appreciated. Dissent is made respectable. Otherwise, you may call any setup a democratic setup it is anything but democratic. So we have to find out, to explore a technique of revolution which will not only tolerate difference of opinion but respect it. Respect for the other man's point of view. This technique is human in the sense that it has respect for the intelligence of other people. In democracy, as you know, there is no collective voting. Democracy does not recognize groups. The individual is a whole number. Every individual is an integer, a whole number. He is not a fraction of humanity, not a part of humanity. Once I was speaking to a Rotary meeting in Nagpur, and the secretary in his report said the average attendance was 85.8. So I asked, I understand 85, all right. There have been 85, there may have been 85 members on the average. But what is this 0.8? So in our calculations, we reduce min to fractions, not only figures, but also fractions. This revolution, which we call not only the total revolution but also the complete revolution, will look upon men as men. Protagoras, the Greek philosopher, said, man is the measure of all things. And the Hamsa Gita of the Mahabharata says, guhyam tad brahma tad idam bravimi, guhyam brahma tad idam bravimi, na manushyat shreshtataram hi kinchit. There is nothing higher than man. And I can understand their saying this, because in this universe, in the creation of God, there is no species so responsible as a human being. The gods have no responsibility. They are not required to answer for their good or their bad deeds. And other animals also are not responsible for their own lives. It is man alone who is karma yoni. Karma yoni, one who is responsible for his own life. And in democracy, every man in himself is complete. In this regard, we of the Sarvodaya movement tried to make an experiment. One man's opinion is as important as the opinion of the 99 who oppose him. John Stuart Mill who wrote his essay on liberty and representative government, has enunciated this principle in the clearest terms. He says, "99 people who have difference with the one man who speaks against them have no right to silence him, then he has the right to silence them." It was Voltaire who said, perhaps, if my memory does not betray me, Voltaire said, "I do not agree with a word of what you say, but I shall give my life for your right to say it." That is the democratic attitude. So in a democracy, a man cannot be killed for his opinions. People the world over have come to the conclusion that capital punishment should be abolished in regard to ordinary criminals who commit murders and other serious offenses. But in the case of those who hold different opinions, who don't agree with the view of the majority, no quarter is shown. They are beheaded mercilessly, as happened in the case of Nathuram Godse. We all Gandhis, who are pledged to non-violence, that is, to non-killing human beings for any reason whatsoever, voted in favor of Godse being hanged. In a democracy, this should never happen. Godse killed Gandhi for his views, and we replied in the same coin. Unfortunately, social justice smacks of collective revenge. Bacon once said, "Revenge is wild justice." And the justice that is meted out in most law courts in the world is social revenge. That is wild justice. This was a digression. What I wanted to point out is that in a democracy there can be no liquidation of the opponent. And as I told you last evening, your opponent is your playmate on the other side. He belongs to the other team, but the other team is necessary to complete the game. That, I think, is the beauty of democracy. The proudest characteristic of a democratic social order. It respects difference of opinion, which no other system respects. So in our economic planning, the first article of our creed shall be that our planning shall be anthropocentric. Man shall be the central figure in all planning. And what man? The man who is disinherited, the man whose life is more or less is a life sentence of prison, which he wants to complete in as best as he can. In 1942, when Vinoba and I were in the same jail, there was a young student who had also come, and his bed was between mine and Vinoba's. The one question that he always used to ask Vinoba, it was in Hindi, "Kya karein, samay nahi katta." Time hangs very heavy on my hands. I don't know how to get rid of this time. Vinoba is a very patient man, but he has very withering wit, capable of making very withering remarks. He heard this boy repeating the same thing for some days, and one day he said, "Why don't you go and hang yourself on the gallows? Time will be finished in 1 minute. Ek minute mein samay kat jayega." So for these men, for whom life is a burden, sentence incarceration in a prison house, find time their enemy. They do not know how to beguile it. It is this man, as I said, for whom we should have respect, we should raise his dignity, and it is he who should be the measure of all things, so far as our revolution is concerned. So the first article of this revolutionary creed is, man is the measure of all things. And the underlying principle is reverence for life. Reverence for life, reverence for all life, however mean, however low. That is our watchword. This watchword was given to us by that wonderful man who was versatile. I think the most versatile man after that great painter of Italy, Da Vinci, Albert Schweitzer. He said, reverence for life should be not only the first article of our faith, but the first rule of our conduct. Reverence for all life, reverence for human life first, reverence for other animals second, reverence for vegetation third, and reverence for nature fourth. This means relationship. Friends, life is relationship. There is no life in isolation. A man cannot live alone. Atma va idam agra asit. The soul was created in the beginning. Ekaki naramate. He didn't feel like living alone. So life is relationship. Relationship with our fellow men, relationship with other animals, relationship with the vegetable kingdom, and relationship with all nature, animate or inanimate. This has been known in our ancient lore as Vibhuti Yoga. The worship of all that contributes to make life sublime. The worship of all that makes life rich. That is Vibhuti. This earth is Vibhuti. The Mother Earth, to whom we owe these thews and sinews and these courageous hearts. The vegetable kingdom, it seems they all combine to make our life not only happy but blessed. So this Vibhuti Yoga is a benediction, and all planning should be approached in this spirit. This planning, all planning should be for the maintenance, not only the survival, but the maintenance of life. Life should not only survive, but prosper. For the survival and prosperity of life, in this short space of time that we have, I shall only enumerate in as few words as I can the main principles on which our planning should be based. The first is, planning and education should be correlated. Direct self-preservation and indirect self-preservation. These are terms that Herbert Spencer used in his book on education. Planning is concerned both with direct preservation and indirect preservation. And education is concerned with the harmonious development of all our faculties. So education and planning should be correlated. They have been separated. That is why there is such tremendous dissatisfaction with the present system of education. So it means that the system of production and system of distribution should be coupled with the cultural development of human personality. These two have got to go hand in hand. Human personality should be capable of being developed through the process, the system of production and distribution, which means that the system of production should be conducive to the growth of all human faculties. Man has been defined as a tool-making animal. What is a tool after all? Tool is the extension of our limbs and senses. It augments, it amplifies our body, our senses and our limbs. I cannot break a coconut with my fist, so I first take a stone and then invent a hammer. The hammer is the extension of my fist. That is why in Sanskrit all these instruments have been known as upakarana. Upa in Sanskrit means near, sameep, next to, adhyaksha, upadhyaksha, next to the adhyaksha. Karan is sense, indriya. Upakaran, that which is next to the indriyas. So tools have been designed not to substitute human power, but to augment it, to extend it. Friends, these are all shibboleths. Whether we will have decentralization, whether we will have centralization, whether we will have technology or whether we will not have technology, these are shibboleths with which we have simply nothing to do. Let us go straight to the point on which we want to take our stand. And that point is that we should not allow any tool or machine to substitute human power. It may amplify, it may augment human power, it must. But if my glasses substitute my eyes, I am nowhere. They say the motor car is scientific. The motorcycle is also scientific. May I ask, is the bullock unscientific? If computer is scientific, if the computer is scientific, is the human being unscientific? The computer is an idiot which has to be fed. It can never substitute man. What are the distinctive features of man? A man can become both a genius and a lunatic, which the computer can never become. There is one book on this subject, Man Modified, if I remember the title all right. And he has concluded with an epigram: render unto the computer the things that are the computer's, and but unto man the thing that are man's. So that is the balance which we have got to strike between man-machine match. The man-machine relationship is today a mismatch. And that is why there are accidents galore. These accidents are an index of the fact that we have not been able to live at peace with the machine. Friends, technology is not science. Science is greater than technology, and man is greater than science. That is why I began with Pythagoras' maxim, man is the measure of all things. So the process of production should be educative. Educative in the sense that it will conduce to the cultural development of man, to the development of his body, the development of his mind, the development of his art, and also the development of his intellect. How can this be achieved? It's for us to explore. Revolution has had no blueprints, and all blueprints that were written before a revolution never proved true, because life does not proceed according to a card or according to a timetable. Life cannot be predicted. Life is earnest, life is real. Life is beautiful, but life is also mysterious. And all its beauty consists in its being mysterious. Because it's a great romance to advance in mystery. So that is the first principle. The second principle is, if we want to include animals in our society, animals other than men, other than man, they should have an honorable place in the process of production. Achyuji was telling me the other day that gentleman who wrote that book on de-schooling society, I mentioned him the other day, but I forget his name today. I forget it, we'll get it sometime. He saw this country and he said, I have never seen animals and men living with each other so amicably as this country. People always warn us, if we go to Kashi, you should beware of the bull in Kashi. Rand, sand, sidi, sannyasi, inse bache to seve Kashi. The harlots, those who live in the brothels of Kashi, the prostitutes, and then the bull, and after them the sannyasi. And countless steps of the ghats. So if you can survive all this, your Kashi pilgrimage will be successful. But he said, he went to Kashi and he said, I have never seen a country in which the bulls have been so docile and the human beings so kind to them. So we have been living together with other animals. And we sometime, some fine morning, our forefathers have come to the glorious conclusion that we should decide that there shall be one animal we shall not be killed on any account. Man shall not be killed. That's the first article of our faith. The second article is, we shall choose one animal which shall be sacred. We shall not be killed for any purpose whatsoever, for any cause. But that animal will not be man's toy, a mere pet. Because pets and toys, they are kept as long as they amuse you. They are not sacred. They are playthings. The day man chose to regard one animal sacred, I think he put forward one step in the direction of cultural progress. It was a stride, a great stride, in the direction of cultural progress. Because what is culture? Culture is the art of living with others. If there is a cultural pattern that does not agree with this definition, it's not culture. It is savagery. So we decided to include one animal or some animals, as many animals as we can, not only in the technique of a, not only in the process of production, but in all other ceremonies and in all other relationships of our life. This means that the tool should be such, the implements of production should be such, as would leave ample scope for the development of the faculties of the animal also. The development of his strength, the development of such art as the animal may be capable of. And after this comes nature. These are known as capital goods, natural resources. So 25 years ago, I think, I came across a book. The title is Our Plundered Planet. I forget the name of the author. There has been a plethora of books after that on the same theme, but that was the earliest that I came across. And he said, we are exploiting nature. F.S. Marvin wrote a remarkable book on the advent of science, the century of hope. And he described the 19th century as the century of the conquest of nature. Is nature our ally or our enemy? If nature is our enemy, and if we go about conquering nature, man on this planet will not survive. Harry Truman, President of the United States, in a moment of great depression, said, "Humanity is under sentence of death. We are all going to die." The same year, William Faulkner won the Nobel Prize for Literature. And when he went to receive that prize, the first sentence that he uttered was, "Men will die, but man shall survive." Man shall not die, he shall survive. This is the robust outlook which a revolutionary should adopt. We don't want to conquer nature. We don't want to yoke nature to our cause, but we want to make nature our ally. Who shall cooperate with us in making this life richer, greater, and more beautiful? So we do not want to exploit nature. Then there are a few other things connected with this planning. What shall be the aim of production? Production for profit, capitalism. All production is for profit. Production for exchange. Profit means exchange or barter. Production for price. Everything has a price tag. Your wisdom, your knowledge, your art, you yourself and even your God, they have all a price tag. And price is against all human values. Functionalism is blind to all human, color blind to all human values. And capitalism is based on the principle of exchange value, which is price. A philosopher once defined a cynic. Who is a cynic? In Sanskrit we call him nastik, devoid of all faith. A disbeliever in God is not a cynic, he is only Nirishwarvadi. A nastik is one who has no faith. So this philosopher defines a cynic as, a cynic is one who knows the price of everything and the value of nothing. Who knows exchange value? Friends, this economy of exchange value is a false economy. It's an economy that has proved our undoing. It is impracticable. It can never be worked in practice. You pay the soldier his hire, but do you assess the value of his life? I myself was once being drowned in the Narmada River. A fisherman saved my life. My father paid him 25 rupees. I asked my mother, is this the price of my life? Or the life of the fisherman who risked his life to save me? Is an exchange value possible? The diluted milk of the milkman, that is orthodox economics. Everything that has an exchange value is wealth. Adam Smith, in The Wealth of Nations, he has defined wealth as that which has an exchange value. Now the diluted milk of the milkman has an exchange value, while my mother's milk had no exchange value. Is my mother's milk no wealth? This economy embraces brainless in the extreme. Vicious in principle, obnoxious in practice. So we have to change this economy of exchange value and work for a new economy which is based on absolute value. No price, no barter, no exchange. Air and water have their value, but no price. I breathe the air without any price. And I hope I shall be allowed to drink water without any price tag on it. So the things that are most valuable in life have no price. This is the economy of value. The basis of distribution shall not be purchasing power, but need. Production for profit, production for sale, capitalism. Production for use, socialism. Equitable distribution. Production for use. Production for your neighbor, democratic socialism. Humanistic socialism. New humanism. This has been named new humanism. And respect for all nature, for all life, has been called the new holism. WHOLISM. But you know, we believe in short forms these days, so the W has been omitted and an apostrophe substituted. New holism, and then there is new immanentism. Life pervades all creation. This is immanentism. Sarvam khalvidam brahma. Life pervades all things. So this is the meaning of reverence for life in all its aspects.